There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Yes. Welcome back to the Des Bishop Podcast. It's Saturday morning, as always. I indulge in a third coffee, as has become the habit slash tradition of these Saturday morning discussions. And it's great to be back. Now, just to let you know that I want to discuss Katie Taylor. Big, big night tonight, Madison Square Garden. I want to discuss a video I watched. It was actually a New York Times video, but I saw it on the Irish Times about the mental health crisis in adolescence, which I thought it was interesting. And obviously, we'll start in the usual way. I sound like, does anyone here listen to Headspace? Let's begin in the usual way. Now, just breathe. I relied on the old Headspace guy very heavily in the first summer of the pandemic. Pandemic. Damn that pandemic. I relied on him very heavily in that first summer of the pandemic. I experienced a bout of severe anxiety. That sort of middle of the summer, I would listen to the Headspace guy. But here's the problem with that, and this is no criticism of Headspace, but now when I hear his voice, the English guy, so today we're going to do dealing with our anxiety. A lot of times it's our thinking, but anyway, his voice now when I hear it, it just triggers me thinking about how stressed out I was during that time. So I don't use Headspace anymore because I sadly programmed an anxiety response based on his very relaxing voice. So once I hear that, I think of, you know, struggling to keep it together for a few weeks there in the summer of the pandemic, which is not a criticism of Headspace, but it's just something to keep in mind that I think that app is best used not to deal with your anxiety, but to prevent it. But actually, if you're having severe bouts of anxiety, that in a way, it's almost like too late for Headspace. Headspace is to avoid the bouts of anxiety. Now, listen, I'm just giving you my own personal experience. Some people may have found that Headspace really helped them during their anxiety. And by the way, Headspace did help me during my anxiety, but it seems to have been a one-off. Because now when I listen to it, I just think about how stressed out I was. So let's begin in the usual way. So just to say that the winter spring segment of the Mia Mama Tour finished on Thursday night in Newbridge. So no gig plugs now for, no gig plugs now until, I guess the autumn. We'll see what evolves during the summer, maybe some American shows, but I'm heading back to New York tomorrow. A few things I got to do. I got to go back and, just got to sort out a little bit of stuff at the house. And, I have to, take Romeo to the vet and, and I have to get married. Oh my God. I have to get married. I startled Fry the dog who I have to return to. Bella's grandparents today. So anyway, I'm heading back to the States to get married. So every time I say I'm getting married, I can't stop singing, somebody's getting married, somebody's getting married, which I'm pretty sure is from the Muppets. Somebody, 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 somebody. Because I think Kermit and Miss Piggy were getting married. Somebody's getting married. Actually, I think I want that to be the walk-in song at my wedding. It's time to play the... Anyway, as you can see, I'm in a good mood. So, a hip update. I saw the surgeon yesterday, and it's all good. But the pain was bursitis, which I had seen on Google's potential. And he said, the surgeon said, that in all his years of doing surgery, he hasn't had many patients that have done as much as I have done in the first 5 weeks and 5 days post hip arthroscopy. He had seen my show in Waterford, and he wasn't giving out to me, but he said I'm exactly where he thought I would be based on the level of stuff that I was doing. Now, it's not that my show was that demanding. He wasn't specifically saying that the show itself was an issue, but 3 to 4 nights a week of driving to shows, you know, sometimes like driving to Sligo and back in the one night, driving to shows, standing up on stage, performing, you know, where you're full of adrenaline and you're not feeling pain and you're probably like pushing it to the limit, plus rehab, was all a bit much. So, surprise, surprise, once again in my life, in a life of overdoing it, I overdid it again. Well, well, well. We never grow up, do we? I have been overdoing it my entire life. Feast or fucking famine with the old Dez. So, but he did say that I'm good. That the bursitis, which had faded by the time, was not bone pain. See, my problem was I thought I fucked up the joint, which I did not. So, crisis averted last week. I was a little depressed. Now, I have to say that my surgeon, who, you know what, I'm going to name him, Mr. Patrick Carton, at the Whitfield Clinic in Waterford, UPMC, Whitfield Hospital. Amazing. Amazing. And I was a little bit disturbed, annoyed. I felt it was unfair that the Irish Sun wrote a whole story, my hip hell. Dez concerned he'll be limping down the aisle. And they basically took my Saturday anxiety-ridden post. Sorry, Stephen Mullen just messaging me there. I forgot to turn off the beep on the phone. And then I pulled the fucking wire out of my headphones. Jeez, it all fell apart there. One lean forward. But anyway, you know, listen, people can write whatever they want. I'm not complaining. It's not the biggest deal. Obviously, you're speaking publicly on a podcast. People can talk about it. But, you know, I was annoyed because actually, you know, I had such a great experience there at UPMC Whitfield, and he has been a great guy. And I was just like, and if you Google, you know, there's a lot of stuff about like, it's not as bad as it feels when it's bad, and you're not as good as you are when it feels good. So don't overdo it when you feel good, and don't get too distraught when you feel bad. Like, it was very normal. Anyone who's had surgery, very normal, sort of the ups and downs of how you're feeling. And for a catastrophizer like me, it's very easy to think that you've done something seriously wrong. And by the way, look up bursitis. The pain can be very severe. And I mean, it was fucking intense for a while. You know, there was a time on Saturday where I literally thought, like, I thought I cracked my hip joint. That's the truth. So, but anyway, I'm fine. And I also thought that I'd set myself back a number of weeks, but that's not the case. And anyway, so I saw the surgeon yesterday. So all is good, ready to rock, ready to get married. So, but I did overdo it. But it wasn't a case. I didn't overdo it in a way that I was annoyed at myself about. I didn't overdo it with the rehab. It's just that I was always going to be overdoing it by doing the second half of my tour after hip arthroscopy, but all good. He's happy. And he said that, like, where I'm at in terms of 5 weeks and 5 days, in terms of the things that I still can't do, like a single leg raise and all these things, he says that's like very normal. Like, you're by no means behind the pack at all. So all good. I'm not racing ahead. I'm not head of the class in terms of my, you know, my development. Other people can do a single leg raise by the time 6 weeks hits. And other people can walk completely without a limp by the time 6 weeks. But I'm definitely in probably the largest pack of people in terms of this amount of time. So, and it's also just nice, you know, when you know that it's bursitis, then when you feel a pain, you're not thinking like, oh shit, I've gone backwards. You just know that it's these Anyway, I think I've talked about it too long once again. But hey, guys, you know, we're here for a while. We're going to be here for a while. We got a lot of things to discuss. So anyway, the tour is over, and here we are. Let's talk about Katie Taylor first. You know, it's a weird thing, and I don't know if it's sexism or misogyny, but women's sport makes me cry more than men's sport. Just want to put that down on the record. There's something about moments. I mean, I can't think of too many, but like off the top of my head, but some generic examples would be like when a gymnast nails it. And you know what's it's so strange is that it's the success that makes me cry. I mean, I feel for people like when they don't nail a landing in gymnastics. I feel, you know, but there's just something I'm literally getting choked up now just thinking about, I don't know why, but I have bawled my eyes out listening to Venus and Serena giving acceptance speeches, you know? I can't think of specific moments in gymnastics, but there's just these moments where you see a culmination of a life of sacrifice and dedication, like, you know, just land in their face, just the joy in their face, the relief in their face as they like hit that landing in gymnastics. A swimmer taking their goggles off and like punching the air. And it's women that make me cry. I don't know why, but female sport makes me emotional. And I don't think this is a criticism, but I don't know why. It hits me deeper in the heart. And Katie Taylor, I just was listening to RT Radio yesterday, a promo for her fight tonight. Historical moment in women's boxing. And I couldn't stop tearing up. You know, there's like these clips of Katie Taylor as a kid, you know, and her mother talking about the fact that like from the age of six, she would stand up on a chair to receive her medal. Like it was in her head from the get-go. And just the fact that like this kid always knew that she wasn't going to be held back by the, you know, the limitations of gender and sport, you know, and they had to change the rules for her to, you know, playing football out in Wicklow when she was a kid. I don't know. There was just something about, I just kept tearing up, you know, and then thinking about 2012, you know, I was in Edinburgh. I was doing my show in Edinburgh with my buddy Bob, the drumming show. And, so Bob and I were living together in the Edinburgh Fringe and in Newtown in Edinburgh, doing exactly what I'm doing now, waking up in the morning, going for fucking amazing lattes on Broughton Street. And I remember the two of us listening to the radio. We didn't have it on the TV. We listened to it on the radio. Katie Taylor and her fight. And it was we were laughing about it because, you know, we're like so emotional, like, you know, patriotic for Katie. But then then in the moment you're just like, fucking go on, fucking kill her, you know. It's brutal. It's a brutal sport. Go on, kill her, bitch, kill her, fucking pound her to the fucking floor, come on, kill her. It's brutal. But then the victory, so sweet, you know, this just unique Irish woman, dedication to the sport all her life, trailblazer. You know, listen, Venus and Serena, you know, I've always just been such a ridiculous fan of them all my life. So is my mother. Well, not all my life, but all their career, which is like half of my life. Half of my fucking life has been watching the Williams sisters. That's how fucking long their career has been. But they were trailblazers in terms of who they were. And they were trailblazers in taking women's tennis to the next level. But there was a lot of trailblazers before them. But in women's boxing, not so much. Katie Taylor, and this is I'm not comparing the Williams sisters, but what I am saying is that she has taken the sport, almost single-handedly taken female boxing to the next level. A fucking Irish girl from Bray, you know? Take the sport to the next level. You know, that fucking Irish. Like, her accent's weird anyway, but then she has, like, a little bit of the Bray, you know, the old Wicklow Rover, you know, and it's great. It's fucking great, you know? Kill the fucking bitch! It's terrible. It's so weird, but boxing, it works, actually. Like, I've struggled to find the same passion for women's team sports, you know, other than beach volleyball. And I don't say that because they're wearing fucking hot bikinis. Actually, I love beach volleyball. And actually, women's beach volleyball is better to watch than men's because the rallies are better. But I'm not like a passionate beach volleyball guy. But like, if I happen to be wanting to watch beach volleyball or I'm looking for some inspiration, I enjoy watching the women more than the men. But I'm not like a beach volleyball enthusiast in terms of watching. And I've enjoyed the Women's World Cup, but like, I don't know. I don't get as connected to it. I don't love it as much. I'm admitting that. And I'm sure that there's, you know, that may change as they get better coverage and different. I know that a lot of it has to do with coverage, you know. This isn't really going to be a debate about women's sport because I'm aware of all the things that have been holding them back. But I have always had, for a long time in my life, a passion for women's tennis and gymnastics and ice skating, obviously figure skating, the other big crier that I failed to mention, you know, the other fucking brutally emotional sport that, honestly, it's child abuse, a lot of what these kids have to go through to get to that level. But god damn it, it is the most intense entertainment. But anyway, my point that I was about to make before I got a little sidetracked there was women's boxing works for me. Like, I get just as much entertainment. Like I don't watch a Katie Taylor fight and think that it's not as good as men's boxing. Now, I know that they punch with less power and, you know, I know it's not as competitive at the moment. As in, there's not as many, you know, like there's not as many women at that level, but that's going to change. But even at the level that it's at right now, which honestly, Katie Taylor, Amanda Serrano tonight, for me, is as exciting as Tyson Fury last week. It's as exciting. To me, this is one of the most important boxing matches of my life. I put it in top 10 moments. And listen, you know, I was a kid, we were obsessed with Mike Tyson, so that number might not be fair, but like, and I'll also admit that, you know, in my later years, I haven't been as plugged into boxing. So this isn't coming from like a fanatic. My father was a boxing fanatic. I am not a boxing fanatic. Okay, but I have had times in my life where I particularly plugged into certain boxers, and I was, 11, 12, 13 years old when Tyson was at his peak. So I was there for the pay-per-views, and I was there. I had like 12, 15 people in my house. We paid for fucking Mike Tyson Spinks, which was one of the greatest letdowns. It was 93 seconds, and it was a big waste of money. And if anyone knows me, to stay up after 10 o'clock when I was young, even today is a struggle. So, you know, I had to stay up late, you know, stop myself from falling asleep to watch 93 seconds of Tyson Spinks. But that was a moment in time, the good Tyson years before he let us down. Anyway, you know what I'm saying. But again, post digression, Katie Taylor, Amanda Serrano, couldn't be more excited. I mean, fucking huge, because first of all, I have no idea who's going to win. Like, I want Katie to win. I think she's better. But this is a fucking matchup. You know, this is a real fight. Who's going to win? Boxing doesn't have these that often these days. You know, boxing doesn't have these moments of, I can't call it. You know, and also it doesn't have these moments of like, this is historical, probably the beginning of a trilogy. You know, it's fucking huge. I'm going to be tense, baby. And, you know, it matters to me as much as like McGregor, Diaz, McGregor, oh God, why? It just, like, I'm having a mental blank, but you know, the McGregor fight where he clocked the guy, knocked him out in the first round. His name has just gone out of my head, but, and I'm not a big MMA guy, which is why I'm forgetting this guy's name. But I again, a moment of time where I was plugged into McGregor before he, again, another Tyson situation, let us down with his antics, you know? I was fascinated by that period of time in Conor McGregor's career. Aldo, by the way, I forgot his name. Aldo. But again, like, couldn't call it back then, you know? So it was fucking tense. You know, the Nate Diaz fights, you know, and he fucking lost, you know? It was tense, you know? But this one, oh God, I'm going to be fucking on edge tonight, man. I'm going to be on edge. But how special, though, that it's a sellout in Madison Square Garden. I mean, like, come on. Women's boxing, Irish woman, you know, Puerto Rican woman in New York, you know, two fucking immigrant communities. I mean, I know there's probably going to be more Puerto Ricans there, but like, you know, that fucking ole, ole, ole is going to be ringing out. And I'm like, you know, some, I wish I fucking flew back yesterday. I wish I flew back yesterday. I'd be at that fucking fight, man. God damn it. Oh, it's going to be great. So, Irish pride for Katie Taylor, but also fair play to them both for, you know, doing it for women, fighting against, you know, everything that they fought against, fighting for the sport. You know, Katie Taylor got fucked because, you know, she could have went pro, but she wanted to fight again. She wanted to go to another Olympics, and then they changed the rules. So she kind of missed out on 4 years of a professional boxing career, you know, that, you know, let's just say she might have been at this moment a little earlier. She's 35. She might have got to this moment a little earlier. I think she's 35, right? Let me just double check that. Yeah, let me go to my self-production here. Because I don't want to get any facts wrong about her. 35 years of age, born in 1986. Let's just make sure I have all my facts right. Let me Google that, actually. It doesn't matter. But anyway, just anecdotally from my memory, I remember feeling like she got screwed, that she wasn't able to go pro after 2012 and still be able to box in the Olympics. It's also hard to believe that it was 10 years ago. Please DM me if I've gotten my facts wrong. Katie Taylor just followed her career, but, you know, I also, you know, anyway, it doesn't matter, but it's just a memory of feeling like it was unfortunate that she couldn't go pro. And, you know, it's almost like, you know, the sport has evolved so much because of her. Like, literally, this fight, the level, it's all because of her. And I feel like, in a way, that maybe, you know, just the fact that she thought it was worth not going pro at that time was because even then the industry was so underdeveloped, and it's developed so much in the period of time since then, it's developed so much that she could headline Madison Square Garden, you know? But what I love about her too is she's not afraid to be the history. She's not afraid to come out there and be like, this is a historical moment for Irish boxing and, you know, a big, an historical moment for women's sport. And, you know, like, and honestly, the fact that she, her emotion for, she could talk about, like, I'm going to make a fry this morning. I went down and I bought some Denny's sausages from the shop. And yeah, my two eggs. We like two eggs with my breakfast.
You know, she could say that in the same tone as,
we're selling out Madison. First time a female boxing headline in Madison Square Garden.
You know, it's like, but I feel like that's her skill. That she fucking takes it in her stride, you know? And she's very religious. Obviously, that's not my jam, but it works for her. So I'm down with it for her.
You know, because she feels like she's guided by the Holy Spirit.
And I'm down with it. Fucking Holy Spirit, activate. Holy Spirit, activate. Activate. And Katie Taylor tonight, Holy Spirit that I do not believe in, activate. You know, because, you know, whatever it does for her mentally, you know, puts her in that fucking special place. I love it, you know? And I think all that sort of monotone emotion, it just, she can handle the big occasions. It's like she was genetically modified for this. She's a prophet. She's actually a prophet, you know? Sent by the equality gods to fucking single-handedly, with gloves on, so double-handedly, pull fucking women's sport into the next generation. And then in this RTE clip, you know, you hear some kid now, today, some little girl talking about sport. And I can't remember, but I just remember it made me cry because it was like, so this girl has somebody to look up to, you know? And then it helps you to understand an old relic like me, a toxic, you know, toxically masculine relic, oblivious most of his life to the privilege of maleness. And I know this sounds woke, but this isn't coming from a woke place. It's coming from a place of awareness. It's like an epiphany, little moments where you realize that little girls didn't have the same role models as little boys. I had infinite sporting role models growing up to look up to think one day I could be that. Infinite. They had fucking slim pickings. You know, the majority of them literally came from the Olympics and from tennis. Slim pickings. I'm sure you can think of some other sports that, you know, may have mattered at that time, but it was slim fucking pickings compared to the role models that I had. So then when you hear this little girl and she's like talking about what it means for Katie Taylor and that you can do anything and nothing can hold you back and girls are as important as boys in sport, and it just fucking hits you in the heart and you're like, yeah, women like this matter. Moments like this matter. And maybe it's male of me to get so emotional for sport. Maybe the fact that it's sport that gets me is pretty male. Maybe not, but it fucking does. It gets me. Helps me to understand. So fair play to her. Win or lose tonight, a fucking prophet sent from the heavens to drag fucking clowns like me into the present. You know? I mean, the trolls will be out there, but the results speak for themselves. A fucking sellout. Well, actually, it may not be sold out just yet, but pretty fucking close. Headline in the Garden. Prophet. Yeah? In the fucking sports Bible, there will be a fucking, there will be a chapter. The Book of Katie Taylor. You know? Chapter 5, verse 6. You know, chapter 5, verse 6.
I never let the boys let me down. I just kept showing up and keeping playing because I was specially talented.
Yeah, it's great. And she's been through a lot of shit with her dad. You know, she's got her own struggles. The documentary of her life will be a doozy. Fucking gunshots and everything. Anyway, I'll stop now before I get too emotional.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So, good luck to Katie Taylor. But I respect Amanda Serrano too. Congratulations to both of them for what they've achieved against all odds. That's that. It's even hard to talk about anything else. I'm so deep in my feelings. What the hell am I going to do? Oh, fuck. I hope that I haven't just like proved that I'm like a psychopath or something. You know the way that in The Sopranos they allude to it, but the fact that they actually literally spell it out at the end now that I think of it, but the fact that Tony could just connect emotionally with animals, that they actually had empathy for animals, compassion for animals, but not for their own species, was like a sign of a psychopath. I hope I haven't just proven that, like, they're like, oh yeah, one of the best examples of deep-seated misogyny is men only being able to understand the plight of women in sport. I hope I haven't just proven. I'm not looking it up. I'm just joking around. But, you know, it'll be pretty annoying to find out. It's like, yeah, some men with deep-seated misogyny only can emotionally connect to women when they win in sporting events. And most of them still can't emotionally connect to a disappointed woman at the end of a sporting event. They'll only cry when they win. I'm joking around, guys. We're having a laugh here. And, you know, listen, it's not the first time I've discussed my passion for women's tennis. So, anyway, I won't talk too long about this other thing, but I highly recommend... Oh, actually, let's just take a quick break from serious subjects. I'm showing my age here, but there was an alarming story in the Irish Times. And... I nearly had a heart attack. You know? Paracetamol supplies to Irish pharmacies experiencing shortages. What the fuck am I going to do? That's like, when I saw that, I was like, Jesus Christ, no. I need my over-the-counter painkillers. No. If ibuprofen comes into shortage, how am I going to live? How am I... going to live? For our American listeners, paracetamol is Tylenol. It's another word for acetaminophen. Imagine a Tylenol shortage, a fucking Panadol shortage. Jesus Christ. You know? A Salpidine shortage of Joanne McNally fucking tearing her hair out. But anyway, that's just a quick joke. But hopefully it doesn't last too long, because God knows I've been fucking tearing the paracetamol out of it now with this. Ibuprofen, paracetamol, my best friend the last week. So, anyway, finally, this is kind of serious, but, you know, there's a lot of people discuss what's going on. I had a discussion about this with Bella myself, Bella being my cousin who lives with me. She's 21, and she's, you know, she's living with me, but she comes from that generation where... mental health issues have become a huge problem.
And so I happened to notice, I noticed something the other day about increasing suicide rates and self-harm, mental health issues in adolescents. So I was actually discussing it with her, and I was saying that they can't pinpoint what it is. And obviously she was making her assumptions. I think that the anecdotal assumptions in that generation are social media, climate change, and, you know, social media, anxiety about the end of the world, were the two things that come out, obviously, straight away. Perhaps that what goes with that is less real human social interaction. But so anyway, it just so happens then that there's a video on the Irish Times website today, which is actually a New York Times video about increase in self-harm and suicide rates in teenagers, which is a real crisis. And it was just, it was interesting. And this is only just, it was just a quick insight into some of these things that, I've been thinking about, like what is driving this. But what was interesting is it also pointed out that the big issues for my adolescence were teenage drinking, binge drinking, drug use, drunk driving. These were like the big issues of my adolescence, which, you know, they were a big deal at the time. And they were certainly the big fears that my parents had. I mean, my mother was at me about fucking drinking from the age of 14. And this has become less of an issue now for parents. When I think about adolescence, or even like when I think about listening to parents back in the day, their biggest fear was my child ending up on drugs, which it seems antiquated now. You know, it's my child doing drugs. That was the big fear. And in the video, they even point out the messaging that used to come out, you know, this is drugs, this is your brain on drugs. Any questions? Irish people wouldn't have known that commercial, but you may have seen it in pop culture because there were a lot of jokes about it, but it was a frying pan. And then it would say, this is drugs. And then they'd crack an egg and the bread, the egg would start frying and they'd say, this is your brain on drugs. Any questions? I think they might have showed the egg first also. This is your brain. This is drugs. This is your brain on drugs. Any questions? But sort of an effective ad in that we never forget it. Whether it actually helped, I don't know. But that was very much the messaging to adolescents. And teenage pregnancies. Like, you know, so these were the big concerns back in the day. And all of those things have dropped. Drug use, drinking, drink driving especially, teenage pregnancy, all massively dropped in current adolescence. Self-harm, suicide, massively on the rise. And I don't think all the stats are out, but the assumption is that the pandemic is going to have increased that again. So there's going to be an even bigger spike due to the pandemic. And obviously, everybody's out there trying to figure it out. And this video doesn't have all the answers. And I, again, as always on this podcast, haven't done the deep dive that is necessary on this. And I definitely, again, need to get somebody on to talk about it. But the big takeaways that I took, which are, good, because I think a lot of us think about this. Personally, I think a lot of my listeners have fucking kids at this age. So they're probably worried about it from that point of view. I'm just worried about it from the point of view of, you know, seeing some people I know struggle, but also, just caring about society, particularly social media's influence on society, which, by the way, is not as definitive as people think. Like, everybody just likes to think it's social media. But there really is no science to back that up. There is science to say that social media will exaggerate or accelerate mental health problems in people that are experiencing them. But it's not to say that it's actually the social media that's creating the problem. Perhaps it's exacerbating it. But again, none of it is definitive. You know? But what is interesting, which I did not know, which maybe I'm late to the party, or maybe I've heard it but didn't really register it, but puberty is happening earlier and earlier. Which, what I thought was interesting about the video is it's giving a scientific reason for some of the problems, which is that puberty is firing up parts of the brain that, you know, lead to like impulse control, or sorry, it's firing up parts of the brain. Again, you're going to have to watch the video. I didn't write it down. But let's just say, so that I don't fucking sound like an idiot and say it wrong, let me just speak vaguely that a part of our brain that fires up when we hit puberty that will lead us to be more emotional, seek out, try to figure out who we are, seek out status, seek out, you know, enjoyment, you know, push boundaries. All the parts of the brain fire up, but they're firing up earlier. And I think the prefrontal cortex hasn't evolved in time to control a lot of these impulses. So actually, there seems to be now a longer period of time where the madness of fucking post-pubescent brain activity doesn't have the other parts of the brain that it needs to fucking control it. So there's almost like an increased complicated adolescence because puberty's happening earlier. And they allude very quickly to why puberty might happen earlier. Screen time, light, diet. But again, that's another thing that needs a deeper dive. But let's just say we don't know exactly what's causing it, but puberty is happening earlier. You know, the average age of puberty, like I think 100 years ago, used to be 16. Now it's 12 or 11 or 12. You know, so and definitely as a result of social media, I guess, access to things that the teenage brain might find difficult to make sense of is infinitely greater. So much information coming from the phone. So much stuff to view, right? With a brain that just can't fucking deal with it. So, you know, I guess I think in amateur psychology terms or in my dumbass head, it literally just feels like for a lot of teenagers, it's like trying to run 2022 apps on a fucking iPhone 6, you know, or an iPhone 4. The phone just can't fucking take it, you know? So you're getting these, like, you know, early access to very complicated stuff for your brain to process without any of the upgrades in the fucking hardware. That's a lot, right? So even before they get to social media, even before they get to the things that we think are driving the increase in mental health issues, which they clearly are, you know, they're already sort of, you know, they're already experiencing like brain issues related to too much too soon, just from a brain point of view. Now, I couldn't get that. It's just a video, isn't it? I couldn't get any distinct conclusion to how much damage is long term, short term, and it definitely appears that it's going to be a while before we figure out the best solutions to this, but it was interesting to find out. I think the biggest takeaway was that some of it has to do with this earlier puberty. And then on top of earlier puberty and the sort of the difference in time between the two parts of our brain maturing, that you then, on top of it, have more stimulus than obviously any generation has ever experienced. And we're trying to figure out what that does. And then obviously we're definitely trying to figure out how we're going to combat this. What are the solutions, both from a point of view of medicine and also of behavior modification, or even maybe just behavior regulation, things that we need to sort of enforce adolescents to do for the sake of their well-being. You know, I literally don't know what those things are, but I do know that, and the video alludes to this too, that a lot of the things that help regulate adolescent complications, like social interaction, sport, being outside, you know, these things are harder to achieve, particularly post-pandemic, but just in general, people are getting a lot of their needs met online, but perhaps those needs, it's not a complete replacement. Again, an assumption, but I think a pretty reasonable assumption, you know? And listen, it's not to say that it was a perfect world before. There was still bullying. There was still issues with, you know, exclusion and people trying to figure out where they fit in. But it perhaps was not as difficult as the situation now. And I think part of the problem now is that you can find solace or you can find an escape in virtual interaction. But it probably doesn't give you enough of the things that you need as a human, just the social and actually understanding of hierarchical needs. You know, like that's the part of what happens in that part of the brain that fires up during puberty is a sort of like an awareness of the hierarchy, or you're finding your position in the hierarchy. But when you plug a hole with online connection, that it not only does it not give you enough, but it also opens you up to the internet's dark side, perhaps a sense that you may, you know, go down the wrong path. I mean, there's plenty of dangerous places down there. And I think the hopelessness that then comes with complete confusion, depression, anxiety, and then the darker solutions, self-harm, thoughts of suicide, you know, it does make sense that this is what's going on, you know? The solutions to not having it, very difficult. And I have talked to a lot of parents, because I am now getting to the age where a lot of parents are starting to worry about this. And they all say that the mental health shit is the big issue. A lot of struggles. And God knows I don't know the solution. But what I was thinking, though, is walking back from the cafe, and I was thinking that, like, maybe this is just, I don't know, I don't have any science behind this, but I've joked about it before and I've definitely talked about it before. But just the fact that we were forced, just due to lack of entertainment in the past, to either seek out other people to have real human social interaction, but also to just be with ourselves without stimulus. The fact that it's almost impossible to find that time these days has to be part of this. It has to be. You know, because I was laughing to myself because I was like, God, you know, when you think of, because it starts early, right? When you think of a five-year-old these days, like I watch him. I'll have my nephews over the house. Cousins will visit and they'll stay out in the Hamptons, you know? And I'll wake up at 6 a.m. There's one particular cousin. I wake up early like I always did, and this is a story about waking up early, but I'll wake up like I always did, and I'll come out, and my little cousin will come out, and he'll walk to a seat, put on the headphones, take out the iPad, and start watching the shows that he watches, which I have no problem with. This is what kids do nowadays. But it makes me think of when I was a kid, I woke up at 5 a.m. every day. I woke up at 5 a.m. every day, and I came downstairs and I turned on the TV and there was fuzz on it. Or there was fucking rainbow colors on NBC. I had to wait for TV to start. Now, I know a lot of comedians joke about this. I'm not really even saying it from a jokey point of view. I'm just literally walking down the street remembering that I was forced to wait. I was forced to figure out a way to entertain myself. Myself and my brothers, you know, as they got older, and we had to wait for TV, we fucking entertained ourselves, you know, or we ate ice cream from the fridge, which was another little, you know, maybe that was when my trouble with eating began, waiting for the Patchwork Family to start on Channel 5. But I waited for TV to start, literally fucking fuzz on the TV, fucking shh, which is funny because now sometimes I put on white noise to fall asleep, yeah? Now white noise is some sort of fucking meditative luxury where it was actually like my enemy in 1982. Shh. God, I used to love when TV started. The Patchwork Family. And then Sesame Street, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. But like, we had to wait, you know? And if you were up late, like teenagers these days, adolescents that maybe stay up late, there was no fucking TV. Now, I honestly had cable by the time I was at a time where I was staying up late. So there was TV. But I do remember a time of TV shutting down. Irish people definitely remember a time of TV shutting down. TV was still shutting down when I moved to fucking Ireland. You know? The national anthem and then kaput. And again, I know this is talked about a lot, but I think you can easily forget how little we were distracted, just naturally, you know? So that has to be a skill set that's been lost, a way to entertain yourself that's not so stimulated. There has to be some things that we just don't learn anymore because we always have our phone. I mean, I obviously do it. I'm in my 40s. I'm never on my own. I'm always got my fucking phone going. I literally had to fucking go on my phone and turn on the fucking Headspace guy back in fucking summer of 2020. I fucking shut my crazy thinking down because I lost all my crutches, my comedy and, you know, my fucking touring, traveling, you know, all my distractions were gone. You know, I ended up fucking thinking, running out of control. Also, I got fucking, so today we're going to, you know, like I got the fucking Headspace guy on my phone. I'm fucking going to the devil looking for angels, you know? But the truth is that there has to be skills lost. So it's not a surprise that we're seeing something change in adolescence. Every generation has their changes. The TV used to be the devil, but I used to fucking watch Fuzz, whereas now I not only can you wake up as a 5-year-old and fucking crack into your iPad, but you have choice after choice after choice after choice. You have every cartoon ever fucking made to man. I was stuck watching the cartoons that were on, and they were only on from 6 to 9. I remember thinking it was so weird when there was a cartoon on at night. When there was a cartoon on at night at a time where it was supposed to be adult TV, it would look so weird to me. I actually remember just thinking, it just looked distinctly odd to see a cartoon at night. And it was always around like Christmas time. There'd be like Frosted Snowman would be on at night. And then you'd be like, wow, a cartoon at night. Stuff for us at night. Because cartoons, they used to come back on at 3 o'clock after school, like 3 to 6. And then the fucking news would start, or 3 to 5. Then the news would start. Kid TV was over. It's fucking news time. You know? Trump is on the TV. John Gotti's on the TV now. No more fucking cartoons. You know? Adult time. And then Jeopardy. 7 o'clock, baby. But not anymore. Everybody's watching whatever the fuck they want to watch. Shit, man. I got into All My Children. I literally, now this is, again, this is not for Irish people, but my mother was a big All My Children person. 1 o'clock ABC. All My Children. And I was a soap opera. 5 days a week with Erica Kane, I think it was her name. Susan Lucci played her. She was like the main woman. And I got into it because if I was home like during the summer, days off, my mother would be watching All My Children. I got into it. That's how little fucking TV there was. I was a fucking 8-year-old watching the trials and tribulations of wealthy people on ABC. People having affairs and, you know, money. People falling out over money. That's how few options I had, you know? Whereas, you know, if I was an adolescent, you know, even 8 years ago, I'd be watching fucking Jake Paul and Logan Paul doing their stupid fucking pranks, you know? Of course this is going to have affected people. For good or for bad, I don't know. But, and I'm not saying All My Children was good for me, but I'm just telling you that the options were limited, all right? When the channels were low, I was watching fucking soap operas at 1 o'clock. I was watching Regis and Kathy Lee at fucking 9 because the cartoons were over. And I love Regis Philbin still to this day. I remember being behind him on a line going to see Colin Quinn and thinking it was the coolest thing ever. You know? So, I'm just saying that it's only natural. So, I feel, honestly, I feel for them. They annoy me sometimes because, you know, they fucking complain about, you know, obviously sometimes you just want to be like, deal with it. Get over it. Like, it's all in your fucking head, but it's not. It's like impossible for me to understand it. It's always impossible to go back to that adolescence, the way you felt. But it's also, you know, it's very hard to put a 46-year-old's mind onto how those struggles manifest in the brain of an adolescent and the hopelessness that comes from the way that it's happened for them, which is, I can't identify with it, you know? But I do think it's one of the big issues of our time. And I hope we get a handle on it. Because I do think that it's becoming very clear that the mental health solutions, medication, and I'm pro-medication, but I think it's becoming clear that there's more that has to happen in society than just medication. And that there might be some ways that we can help some of this by changing behavior. Or, like basically, like, you have an obesity crisis, changing your diet and exercise and helping society to achieve that is like a very successful and essential public health measure. When it comes to adolescent mental health issues, we're going to have to figure out what behavior we need to encourage to prevent and aid adolescents who are struggling. Prevent the struggles and also aid those that are struggling. I have no idea what they are, but I think that there has to be more of an emphasis on real human interaction. There has to be more of an emphasis on less screen time, but I don't know how to achieve that. But I think there needs to, it's almost like there needs to be messaging that's like, it's not like we're being annoying adults telling you to get off your phone. We're actually saying that, like, it's imperative because your generation is dying as a result of not doing these behaviors. But I think we need to become very clear about which behaviors they are, which positive behaviors. What is the equivalent of 10,000 steps for an adolescent in relation to their mental health, in relation to less screen time, what drugs to avoid, what social media, what to be aware of on social media. You know what I mean? Like, I think we need to get very clear about that because I think it's like the issue of our time. But again, I don't know what they are, but I do think that we need, in a way, we need the equivalent of, this is drugs, this is your brain on drugs, any questions? We need the equivalent of these kind of public health campaigns related to mental health. But we need to fucking very quickly figure out, with science-based evidence, what are the best behaviors we can encourage to help people. You know? And it's not just, it should include like opening up to people about how you feel, but also like it can't just be see a psychiatrist and get some meds, you know, because that's very specific to each individual. But what can we do as a society to stem some of this change? But I gotta think encouraging less pseudo social interaction, cyber social interaction, we have to replace some of that with real human interaction. I know that brings its own stresses and, you know, people have social anxiety and, you know, group dynamics aren't the fucking answer to all our problems because they cause plenty of problems for people. But I do think that it could be a harm reduction method for sure. And I think we need to get to the bottom of why the fuck we're having earlier puberty. And you know, it wouldn't hurt to get into sort of like, well, you know, what's the best diet in adolescence to just decrease certain hormone secrete, you know, whatever. Just like, we just need to get like a definitive message, almost like, even though this is controversial and the food pyramid is controversial, right? Because there's just, it's evolved over time and people debate about the food pyramid, but we almost need like a, just a very definitive group of things that are essential for your mental health, particularly in adolescence where you're just so, you're such a work in progress. And like the foundation of this building that's going to be standing for odds on 80 years could end up being defective because there was so much fucking problems in your adolescence, you know? And sorry, I don't want that to be alarmist, like, oh, because I don't want some people now thinking about their own adolescence and thinking, shit, do I have a fucking a fucked up foundation, you know? Do I have, what are those, the things that are causing problems in Irish building now, the fucking, anyway, the blocks that are all cracking up, people are having to pay out of their own pocket to fix their houses that are crumbling. I don't want you to think that you use those blocks, you use defective blocks in the foundation stones of your own mental health. But I think you know what I mean. But by the way, I definitely have some defective blocks from my fucking adolescence. I'll tell you that right now. You know, I definitely carry around the oddness of an odd adolescence. So trust me, I'm not judging you. I'm only identifying, you know, heading off to another country on your own at 14, fucking dealing with your shit, you know, doing all this time. Like I was watching this video, this fucking, you know, your brain popping off during puberty and the other part of your brain not developing in time. And I was like, good Lord, not only was I fucking on my own at 14 while all this shit was popping off in my brain, but I was fucking drunk all the time. You know, and then by 16, I was taking fucking psychedelics. So God knows what fucking defects I have in my fucking foundation stones of my mental health. But hey, you make the most of it. So that's it, guys. Good ep. That's an episode. It's another episode of Me on My Own. I'm recording an episode with Dave McSavage now in the afternoon. I'll probably double down on Katie Taylor with Dave. We'll have a laugh about it. Sorry for the delay on getting that one up. It's just, it's a tough one, you know, because me and Dave, we're quite happy. We've recorded quite a lot, but it's like, because I feel like, you know, right at the beginning, I just suddenly felt the gaze, I felt the ears of the Irish, you know, because I feel like there'll be plenty of people that'll be curious about this pairing. And I thought, I suddenly got like a little paranoid about how good it should be at the beginning. That we don't want to miss that. We don't want to miss that moment. But also, I was the ears. The ears bring fears. the mind of the anxiety-ridden podcast host. The ears bring fears. More ears, more fears. More ears, more chance that the searing pen of the hater could rise. So I was also, you know, conscious of like making sure that in those early episodes where the high ears are, before you get the fans, you just have the voyeurs. So I was just like worried. I was just overly critical of what we put out. So sorry for the delay, even though I've mentioned it. But Dave is coming over. I mean, I literally have 5 episodes worth of material, but I'm trying to put out 3 episodes to start. And we've had some great ones and some not great ones, just in terms of, you know, getting a feel for each other. But that will be out soon. But, you know, one of the reasons I actually asked Dave was because I wanted, you know, I would put him down as quite a bold performer. If you've ever seen Dave McSavage live on stage, which, you know, it can be hit or miss in terms of the risk taking, it's risk reward. And when it lands, it lands. But, you know, when it doesn't land, it can be the opposite of fun because the room can turn, which is Dave enjoys skating along that edge, you know. And I appreciate it as a performer, especially as somebody who just watches comedy all the time. The excitement of that is, you know, it's kind of like moving from smoking heroin to shooting heroin. You kind of need that fucking, you know, you need something to really spark your interest. So that one of the reasons why I asked Dave was I was like, well, he's so bold on stage. I need somebody to pull me out of my fucking anxiety about everything I say. You know, I need to basically not be afraid to be wrong, because there's so much fun in being wrong. But the consequences of being wrong have risen. But I see people, you know, who are not as concerned about being wrong, thriving. And I feel like that the freedom that comes from not being overly concerned about being wrong leads you to greater moments on your pod. It's more fucking fun, basically, you know? So I was like, I need to get Dave to fucking help me to not be afraid to be wrong. But he's fucking worse than me, his anxiety about all this stuff. So actually, it's literally a podcast of two people who are just like dealing with that fear of being wrong, you know? And when I say being wrong, I literally mean just having the wrong opinion on a thing, you know? And again, I'm not going to start complaining about cancel culture. This isn't a cancel culture complaint. This is just an admission of the emotions that myself and Dave are dealing with, which is leading to a slight delay in publication. And it also leads to a slight, often lack of spontaneity in conversation, because you start thinking about other people listening to it rather than just conversing. But anyway, that's it. Listen, you've been very good with the reviews, and I really appreciate it. If you haven't done so, please do scroll down to the end of the podcast episode list on Apple Podcasts. Rate and review 5 stars. Leave a review. Any review is fine. But also do spread the word. Screenshots on your Instagram, on your Facebook. I do, by the way, the podcast now automatically posts onto my Facebook. So you can listen to it there also. So if it happens to pop up on your Facebook, don't be afraid to leave a comment. I've already had a positive effect of adding my podcast to Facebook, in that a distant cousin of mine from Banan in Kerry, near the tunnel in Glengariff, listened to the podcast about my grandmother's life, and he's reached out to me. He wants to talk to me because he knows more stuff. Also has one or two corrections, nothing controversial, but just he knows exactly where they used to hide IRA men during the War of Independence, or during the tan time, as they call it down there. He knows a bit more information on where they used to do that, you know, and it's just good to really get into fact, because I do think that some people think I've sort of like romanticized this crazy story. But so actually a cousin of my mother's reached out to me from New Jersey to tell me that he had heard the pod and he wanted to chat to me. So I'm going to chat to him probably in the autumn because I'm leaving. But so already a benefit of it being on Facebook, perhaps other people knowing about the pod that wouldn't have known about it. It was very interesting, actually, because my cousin in New Jersey, my mother's cousin, I think it was my mother's second cousin. It was my great grandfather's brother's grandchild is who this woman is. So I think that makes her my mother's second cousin. She was telling me that most people thought that the house was haunted up there years after it was like left abandoned and wasn't torn down to the 1970s, that everybody in Glengariff thought the house was haunted. So the plot thickens on my grandmother's house. If you've seen the show, you'll know that I discuss it. So anyway, I'll wait to talk to Danny. I'm going to try to record it. Whether it's a podcast episode or not, I want the fucking evidence on audio. I want the information about the deep, dark secrets of my past from down there on the border between Cork and Kerry. At the entrance to the tunnel on the Cork side, there was stories that were down there before. People never spoke much of it until that loud-mouthed Irish-American comedian started spilling family secrets all over Ireland. And soon more secrets spilled. And the ghost rose from the grave with a very simple message to his great-grandchild. Will you ever shut the fuck up and stop going on about how I fucking died, will you? Anyway, talk to you guys next week from New York, probably from West Hampton. Come on, Katie. Slán.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.